Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the 378th episode of Awards Chatter, the Hollywood Reporter's awards podcast. I'm the host, Scott Feinberg, and my guest today is an extraordinary singer, and it turns out, an extraordinary actress, too. Pace Magazine wrote that she brings her contemporary R&B and pop sensibilities to a palette of jazz, blues, and at the core of everything, soul. The Los Angeles Times has said her voice embodies the old soul of a matriarch and the casual cool of a homegirl, while Billboard described it as a distinctive amalgamation of Billie Holiday, Dinah Washington, Nina Simone, Aretha Franklin, and Motown. And NPR said it exhibits Eartha Kitt's unflappable confidence, Amy Winehouse's effortless grasp of classic jazz, Billie Holiday's access to raw emotion, and Adele's range and pop sensibility. She was nominated for 3 Grammys before recently turning to acting as well, making her big screen debut as the title character in Lee Daniels's The United States vs. Billie Holiday, for which she was nominated for the Best Actress and Best Song Critics' Choice Awards and the Best Song Golden Globe Award, and for which, 2 Sundays ago, she won the Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama Golden Globe, becoming only the 2nd Black winner of the prize in that category 35 years after Whoopi Goldberg became the first for The Color Purple. A great talent and a personal favorite, Andra Day. Over the course of our conversation, the 36-year-old and I discussed the roots of her passion for music, how a freak series of events brought her to the attention of Stevie Wonder, who, in turn, helped her to launch her career with hit songs like Rise Up, which has become the unofficial anthem of the Black Lives Matter movement, why neither she nor Daniels were initially interested in her playing Holiday, and whether or not she intends to continue acting, having now done so, plus much more. And so, without further ado, let's go to that conversation. Andra, I really appreciate you doing this.
Hey, Scott. Good to see you, actually.
You too. Nice. A lot's happened since I last saw you. Congratulations.
It's been definitely crazy.
Yeah. So happy for you.
No, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's so funny, like, feeling that. I felt everybody's love and support, you know, just and their love for her, you know, is so cool. Wow. That's good to see your face again.
You too. Well, you know, last time we spoke, I only got to pick your brain about the movie, but on this podcast, we really go through the whole life story. So I hope you're ready. Hope you don't mind. I guess let's start really right at the very beginning. For people who don't know your story, can you just tell them where you were born and raised and what your folks did for a living?
Yeah, I was born in Seattle, Washington, which I didn't even know until a few years ago. I thought I was born in Spokane.
Really?
My mom was like, where'd you get that from? I was like, you, I thought. So no, I was born in Seattle, Washington. But we moved, almost probably like 6 months, I guess, or something like that after I was born, down to Seal Beach, California. And then we finally settled. So I was raised in San Diego, Southeast San Diego, because my father was in the military. Mm-hmm. And my dad, as I said, he was served 26 years in the military, retired, and now he's actually just started his own business. It's called Grill Time. So he builds and then these custom amazing backyard grill units and
nice,
and then refurbishes them as well too. So, and then my mom, she writes children's books. My mother started as a custodian. She was a stay-at-home mom as well, but she was started a custodian at a church. And then she worked her way up to facilities manager, and then she retired from that, and she started writing children's books. So she
Amazing.
Just wrote something. Go check it out, guys. I hear the wind blow and wonder. I'm so proud of my parents.
You should be.
Take on these, like, projects, you know, as they're older, and you're like, wow, it kind of just crashes sort of this idea that there's a timeline for things, you know? I'm really proud.
Absolutely. Yeah, what's your mom's name so people can look up the book?
Oh, yeah, I appreciate it. It's under the author name D.A. Beatty. So her name is Delia Ann Beatty. But if you look up D.A. Beatty, yeah, oh, I appreciate that.
No, of course. Now, it leads nicely, actually, into the next question, which is that you were born with neither the first name Andra nor the last name Day.
Damn, so
how did we get here?
Yeah, so I mean, my first name actually is Cassandra, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I just chopped that in half, took off the C-A-S-S. And I just like the way the hard A sounded on Andra better, so mm-hmm. which is so annoying for people because they're always like, Andra, Andra. So my real name is Cassandra, but my stage name is Andra, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the day came from the one and only Billie Holiday. You know, I like the relationship between her and Lester Young, and he gave her the nickname Lady Day, and she gave him the name the President, and he called her mother the Duchess, and so she'd say they were the royal family, so I just chopped it in half and took the day.
But, like, people should understand, this is not, like, something you didn't just, like, change your name last week. This is, when did you start using the last name Day?
Gosh, geez, how long has this been now? I probably have been using, I mean, it's probably been about 8 years now, I think about 8 years or something like
so
that.
So since
eight,
you really sort of, I guess, maybe signed your record deal?
Yeah,
or,
yeah, it was, I mean, I guess a little before that, right? No, oh my God, wait, when did I start working with them? So 9 years, almost 10 years, actually, because we're in 2021, and I started working with them in 2011, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think almost 10 years now. Yeah.
Got it. Well, you know, you have spoken a lot about being a very religious person. I wondered if that started young, and I wondered if it started in the way that I think for a lot of our greatest singers, including some who I think you are pretty fond of, like Aretha and Whitney, that was, I believe it started in the church. So was that the case for you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess I knew it was really came from like listening to singers like Whitney when I was very, very young and like Aretha. And then I did sing in church as well, too. And I do always say clearly, though, I don't like to call myself a religious person. I say that I'm a spiritual person with a relationship because religion, honey, can be a little bit crazy. So I did. I was singing in the church, you know. But I think it's so funny because people always be like, oh, you know, of course it started in the gospel church. But it wasn't really a gospel church that I went to at first. It was just very, like, conservative, you know, praise type songs, whatever. So that didn't, gospel, it wasn't really until I got a little bit older. But I did. It's a huge part of who I am. You know, I think I was exposed to it when I was young by my mother, and then I kind of went off and did, you know, my own thing. And then I encountered, you know, God or Christ in a different way and have a really wonderful relationship. You know, I think it's fills everything with just, you know, purpose and intention, you know, and love, so much love and so much peace, you know, with everybody I encounter. So, yes.
Yeah. So I don't know if you were getting amazing feedback about your voice, even in church, but it sounds like there was some kind of a turning point, I guess, around the age of 11 or 12 when you changed schools and now start studying at an art school.
Yeah.
What led to that move? Was somebody saying like, we got to really, you know, we got something special here?
I think I really discovered that I could sing at like, I feel like it was like around six, and it was like singing Whitney Houston. You know, I think that's when my parents and my family sort of like, oh, she can sing, you know. But you know, it's funny. It was never like this epiphany, like, wow, she has a voice moment. Cause music is so much a part of my upbringing. Like my grandfather, though I didn't really know him on my mother's side, was a jazz musician and a jazz singer. My father sings well. My mother sings well. So music has, we've all sung, you know, my younger brother, Jackson plays, you know, keys, guitar, sings, writes, you know, so we've always sort of done this. So it was never like a voice, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was like, yeah, she better be able to sing. Cause the rest of us can, you know? So, yeah.
But the kind of, you know, we often hear on this podcast and just generally, obviously, in this business about the importance of arts education, which is something that is not always available to kids. I think you had it at both of these schools, but maybe you can talk about the most valuable takeaway from being, I guess, ultimately at the San Diego School of Creative and Performing Arts.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and to answer your first question, sorry, mm-hmm. I went to a feeder school, which was called Valencia Park. And so that was kind of an arts elementary school. And so there were a handful of schools that actually fed into SEPA. So it was actually really a blessing we were able to go there. I mean, I think the thing that it really teaches you, the biggest thing, and I say this all the time with the arts, it's not just that, okay, it prepares kids for a career in the arts, because a lot of kids that I went to school with probably never engaged in the arts or never. But what it really, really does is that I feel like it makes your brain like a sponge. You're able to absorb information better, understand information, process information better, and not just like, you know, academically, also emotionally, you know, and that's one of the things that helps you to really interact with people, to be more understanding, more loving, you know, to celebrate people. And so I'm such a huge advocate for it, even if it's not a school for the arts, because it really taught me how to be present. It really helped me to absorb other information and to look at things in life through different lenses and through other people's lenses. And then the technical stuff, you know, we really did train in jazz vocal performance, or I danced for 22 years. Sorry.
Wow.
You know, doing stage shows, auditioning. So I feel like I love to hear that you're a proponent of it, because so am I.
Sure.
It's all around. I think it just makes societies and young people just healthier, you know?
Well, and another thing it can do, and in your case, I believe it did do, was kind of acquaint young people with the great artists who came before them.
Yes.
In your case, including, I guess that was really the beginning of knowing who Billie Holiday was, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I was 11 years old when my 11 or 12. I'm always like, wait, where am I? 11 or 12 years old. And when my musical theater instructor actually introduced me to Billie Holiday, he was like, you got to study Billie Holiday. I thought it was a man at first. I remember being like, oh, no. Happy International Women's Day, y'all. I've always
right.
You know, but then I listened and I heard first a song called Sugar, I called my baby Sugar, you know, and then I heard Strange Fruit, you know, and Sugar shook me first, because I was like, you know, I was looking for singers to study, but it didn't sound anything like Whitney, and it didn't sound anything like, you know, Aretha and Gladys and Patti. But it was like a train that felt like it was going to fall off the tracks and never did, you know. And so I was like, whoa, her tone is so different. And this is one of the greatest singers. So she changed what a great singer is for me, you know, mm-hmm. and helped me to own my own voice. And then hearing Strange Fruit, at that age, I couldn't process fully what she was saying. All I knew was that it prostrated me and I wanted to just cry and to just help her. I just thought, whatever she's going through, I know she lost something, or she's losing something, or she's in a lot of pain. And I just, it made me really want to affect people. Like, if they stop and listen to my music, to make them stop and listen mm-hmm. to whatever it is that I make, you know, that it impacts people. Even if it's just five, maybe it won't affect 5 million, but it will affect five, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I guess another thing that happened at that school was your first kind of introduction to acting. I know you say you never acted before United States versus Billie Holiday, but what about Once on This Island?
That's a big You probably sound like my old school. They're like, girl, you were a gypsy. You were Once on This Island. Everybody's who banging on me right now. No, so we did do plays. I mean, listen, I'm not going to lie. A stage show at high school, I realized.
It's a little different.
Yeah, I thought it was similar. When I get, that camera. That camera is so, like, it is literally a lie detector test. And Lee Daniels camera, and it, oh my God.
Oh,
but
yeah,
we did. We did a bunch of shows at SCPA. I was a part of Once on This Island. I did play Timon. I played the lead in that. And then I played the lead in Gypsy. I played Gypsy Rose Lee, which is vintage stripping, y'all. That's burlesque. Very, very progressive school.
Yeah, right.
But, we did another show. Actually, this is such an incredible school, SCPA. You know, we did this one show called The Quilt, and I was so moved by it, you know, because it was really just telling different stories, you know, that people experienced within the gay community, and people, you know, and dealing with AIDS and sort of being blamed for this horrible thing. You know, it was just a really beautiful, progressive school. And, like, we did, you know, so that was called The Quilt. We did, you know, Babes in Arms, Oklahoma.
Mm.
You know, they did. I tried out for Sweet Charity, but I didn't make it.
Yeah,
that's really hard, but I didn't make it.
Eat your heart out, teacher. That didn't. Well, so, I mean, I guess, you know, this was obviously a formative time for you. You graduate, I don't know if it was 02 or 03, somewhere in there. 03. Mm-hmm. And at that point, were you already set on, I'm going to immediately go right into pursuing a career in music? Or was there thought about going to college or doing other things? Or, you know, how clear were you about what you wanted to do next?
You know, I knew I wanted to do music. It really, my thing was sort of, do I want to do Broadway or do I want to, you know, do recorded music and like writing? And just as I got older, because when I was young, I didn't like writing. I just felt like it was so much pressure. And, you know, I wanted to do, you know, to just sing like how Whitney sung, or sing how, you know, and then you discover all these great artists who, like, you know, wrote their songs as well as sang other people's songs, and, you know, and so And then, you know, so I was forced really to write. And then it just became like a whole other vehicle to do things. So I realized I really wanted to, I liked creating. I liked being sort of the when it came to music, I liked being the person who told the story and who wrote the story and who created it. And I realized I didn't want things put on me. I wanted to create it and put all these ideas together. So yeah, I definitely knew. And I mean, it was rough in the beginning. You know, I would bounce around to just different, go ahead. What are you saying?
No, well, that's where I wanted to go next, because I mean, it sounds like for people that think this was like an overnight thing, you know, you don't just come out of school and be able to solely work at making music. Right. How did you kind of make it work in terms of paying the bills, in terms of finding your voice? I mean, literally, I'm sure there are people that, you know, your what you seem to gravitate towards in terms of your genre or genres, if we could call it, those aren't necessarily the most commercially obvious things. No. So, you know, what were people saying as you came out and were trying to make this work?
I think, first of all, it is extremely difficult, and you have to have a level of patience, and you have to believe, you know, also don't believe what people tell you. You know, we have this whole idea, like, you know, that you have a timeline and you have a, you know, and you can only do things within this certain amount of time. And I really hate that, because I've been told multiple times in my life, you're past your prime. You know what I mean? You're over the hill or whatever, you know, because of my age. I mean, I was being told this at 25, you know what I mean? Jesus. So like, and I understand it. It's like, okay, some people get into this business at like 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, you know, but that's not everybody's story. You know what I mean? And I think that full maturation, I believe God's full maturation for each of us is different in every person's life, depending on, are you the foot? Are you the arm? Are you the, you know, like, and I think that's what makes it a beautiful picture.
So, and you actually have something to say by the time you're, you know,
That age, you know, in your late 20s, or as I was when all of this started to kick off, you know what I mean? But I've been pursuing it. I mean, yeah, since I was a kid, and it's not easy. I was just bouncing around different studios in the hood, trying to just write different songs and, you know, trying to meet people. Of course, I was one of those people that try to meet, like, you know, P. Diddy at a party. Like, hey, once I meet him, he's going to hear this demo tape and he's going to be like, wow.
Did you really try?
Yeah, of course. You believe everything. You believe all of these things are going to work. You know, it's not till you get older and you're in the business that you realize, wow, that's a rough way. But I also feel like it's character building stuff too. Like, I don't regret it. You know, yeah. I had to put all my shows together, the background singers and, you know, everything. We did a show at the Grove at Cane's in San Diego one time. It just, you know, it's so much random shit. And it is an education. It's like a college education in life. You know what I mean? So it's like, but really I ended up getting with this manager producer, and that was pretty rough, but, you know, but God bless him. That's what we leave it at. but the one good thing, the silver lining that came from that, is that he happened to meet Kai Millard Morris, who was Stevie Wonder's wife at the time. Just a wonderful, blessed person. And she heard me singing, a clip of me singing in front of a strip mall in Malibu.
Well, that's what I want. I want to stop you for one second, because I've heard this story and I'm like, was she like at the strip mall in Malibu when you were there? No. So I just want to set the whole record straight between how Andra is at a strip mall and this somehow reaches Stevie Wonder, if you can connect the dots.
So it starts out, I'm performing at a strip mall in front of a shoe store, I guess, that had just opened or something like that, you know, and there was a couple seats out there and stuff. And so, And the guy I was working with at the time, he was just filming, you know, and he actually found himself after that. I can't remember how long after. Oh, my God. I can't even remember if it was like weeks or months or I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But he found himself in a pastry shop with her, you know, and they just were talking. And then he showed her the clip, you know, what he does, works with this artist. And she loved how I sounded. And that's when she was like, I am Stevie's wife. I would like to play this for him. You know, I was like, so, and then they orchestrated a phone call. They set up a phone call, and I was living in, you know, we didn't have no fireplace like this. We had a 7-Eleven in front of us and a dumpster.
Oh, man.
And it was about this big.
And the phone just rings and it's like, hey, it's Stevie.
Yeah, and it was like, hey, and I was not Andra at the time. So it was Cassandra at the time. Yeah. And this is Stevie Wonder. I was like, yeah, I know. And then my mom did not believe me that I was on the phone with Stevie Wonder at all. I think she just wanted me to do the dishes. And I was like, but, and it's funny because he just talked to me about writing a song. He had an idea for a song. He was just asking me like what my sign was. And we just talked about life and making music. And he asked me why I recorded certain things the way I did and my taste in music. And it didn't work out because of subterfuge. And
the first I heard, wait, now you got to clarify this. Cause this makes the story even crazier that, yeah. All right, so you've wound up at the attention of Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
Then you fall out of the orbit of Stevie Wonder, and then somehow you wind up back in. So how does that happen?
Yeah, I'll tell you very candidly. And I the reason I never go into this is because I'm like, you know, even if somebody has offended or done something or slighted me, I don't like to drag people's name, and I don't like to. So I won't say his name.
Sure.
But it basically, he went and told them, once I got off the phone, they said they wanted to work with me. So the next thing was to try and get in the studio and, you know, make some music. I didn't hear back from them after that. And he called me back, the manager I was working with at the time, and said they didn't think you were good enough. They didn't really like you. And so I was like, all right, you know, it was hurtful. But at the same time, it's like you get used to no's, you know, I was like, yeah. All right, cool. I'm not good enough. OK, no problem. I just got to keep working, you know. Yeah. And it turns out that he had actually told them they needed to pay him something like, I don't know, $50,000 or something for me to just even step in the studio with them or whatever. So I never knew that until years later. Fortunately, Stevie and Kai held on to my information and actually reached out again and let me know what really happened. And then and then they connected me with the producer who did my first album. So I love them on a whole other level. You know what I mean?
The fact that it came back around is amazing. And and then I guess that producer you're talking about is Adrian Gervitz.
Adrian Gervitz, yeah.
And this was your first album that you start working on in 2012, comes out in 2015, Cheers to the Fall. And yet in the interim, that seems like, I don't know how long it normally takes to make an album, but 3 years seems like a long time. But I know that it was not like that was the only thing you were doing, because a lot of people kind of in that interim period found out about you through YouTube. And yeah, I wonder if you can just talk about how did you start doing these covers and mashups and creative things on YouTube?
Yeah, that was the idea of, I think that was, you know, YouTube was kind of just, you know, it was blowing up and all these things, and they would see all these covers. And I never really imagined necessarily myself doing that. I think, I, to be honest, at first I was a little opposed to it, but I was so green that I was like, all right, well, if my producer and this guy who wanted to be my manager at the time, who is my manager today, you know, if they suggested that they think it's a good idea, you know, I'm going to trust, you know. I had gotten to a new place in my faith as well as a person. I had gotten to a moment of clarity because I was just as younger. Listen, trying to make it in music was difficult. I was also a mess, you know what I mean? And I was just like high every day. So, but not like, this is why I stopped smoking weed. I know other people do and that works for them, but for me, it didn't. So, I had finally gotten to a moment of clarity and in my faith, just a moment of just trusting God. And so, you know, I'm a Capricorn, typical December, like control everything. So I had, was like, I'm going to trust him and do this. And then we did him and people responded really well to them, you know, which was interesting. I just knew that creatively, whatever we did with these videos, I did not want to do. I hate this idea that it's like, if you're a black girl, this is the type of music you do. This is the type of music you like. This is the type of, I didn't like that, you know? And so not that I didn't like those, but I love that music, but I just hate this idea that we can't be layered and have all these different diverse tastes. So I wanted to do a Florence and the Machine cover. I wanted to do a Muse cover, which Muse, that was one of my favorite songs and one of my favorite bands. I wanted to do I knew I wanted to rap. That's why I had to do the Biggie.
Eminem, right?
You know what I mean? Yeah, and the Biggie thing, because I wanted to sing the rap. Like, just whatever I did, I wanted it to say, I want you to see a black girl in vintage clothes in a space we're not represented in fashion. And I want you to see us doing things that interest me and that at the time and that are different, diverse tastes. And so I'm glad. I'm so glad we did it, you know?
Well, and is it your sense that it was suggested as a way to kind of, that would be, that this is the new way to catch the eye of record labels? Because, I mean, at the time when Stevie connected you with, I guess, Adrian at that point, again, 2012, you're going to want to start working on an album, but that doesn't mean you had a label yet. That did Warner Brothers come about partly because they saw this heat that was coming off of YouTube?
That was a part of it. And actually we got together and started working. Really, I met with Adrian and Stevie. It was 2011, I think, even actually.
Wow. Like, okay.
But yeah, so a part of that was just the story, obviously, of Stevie as well, too. And they did like my voice, you know, at the time. And then seeing the YouTube covers, you know, I think that was a part of the covers, was to see how audiences responded to me. You know what I mean? To see how they liked it. And, you know, which is so nerve wracking, you know, because you're like, not really sure how this is going to go. But generally, we got a really positive response and a reaction. And so I like that about YouTube. You know what I'm saying? I'm obviously not very much on it. I'm not, to be honest with you, I'm not great at social media. I'm trying to get better. We got a new team in place, y'all. You'll see some more stuff. And usually I'll be like, they're like, Andrew, girl, it's been 7.5 months. You don't want to let the world know you alive. what I love about it is that I see all these people on YouTube, on, you know, Instagram, on
Facebook or
what's the one that they always do the videos on?
Oh, now TikTok is
TikTok, one of the, that's yeah, it, yeah. TikTok. And the Snapchat, you know.
Yeah.
So I see them do these things, and it's amazing because, you know, I have a friend who's so brilliant on YouTube and all that stuff, and, you know, she went from having nothing to getting her dream home, and to, you know, so it's just, yeah. I don't know. I know that people go, fake celebrities, real. I'm like, who cares? Like, people are grinding and putting in the time, and I love that. I think it's great. Yeah.
Well, so this debut album, Cheers to the Fall, you've called it, quote, an autobiography told in the form of 13 soul music tracks, close quote. I guess part of that process of making it, though, is cutting that down from, like, 40, I read, to 13, and figuring out what it's tough. What are you going to keep on? What are you not? And in fact, I'm going to ask you in a minute about one that wasn't supposed to be on there from what I understand, but just like to set the timetable here, the album drops on August 28th, 2015. And then within a week, I believe is when Rise Up, people are hearing that single over the Beats commercial with Serena Williams that makes that go completely, you know, viral. And so, you know, that single ends up at number 4 on the Billboard 200. I guess I just wonder if you can talk about that moment where, here in for the first time in a huge way, you're putting yourself out to the world and you get that kind of a response.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I got to tell you, it's a blessing in so many ways. First of all, you're 100% right. It was not supposed to be on the first record. I was like, we actually
Rise Up.
I actually just released a song last year for charity, for just like those struck hardest by COVID. And it's a song called Make Your Troubles Go Away. Mm-hmm. And I says, okay, well, but that was the original song that was supposed to be in place of Rise Up. But we had some issue with the producer, God rest his soul. It didn't quite work out. Mm-hmm. And so my label says, we want to play you something. I go, I don't know. You make me uncomfortable when you play me things. But I was going to be real one hundy toe with you.
Yeah.
But they were like, well, you wrote it. I was like, okay. So then they plays it for me and I says, okay. And I loved it. It struck me right. It was like, wow. And it just raised its hand. And then they tried to produce it and add all these beats to it and do all this stuff. Rise Up, Honey is an obstinate girl. Okay. She is obstinate. I'm not moving. I'm not going in. They tried all these beats and tried to have these DJs remix it so they could make it dancey. They could Rise Up was like, no, 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 no. It's like, so she ended up being the one. And I will tell you, that song, it's a blessing because first of all, it being adopted by the Black Lives Matter movement, which means so, so, so much to me. It put me in front of, you know, the president and the first lady, Barack and Michelle Obama. You know, it changed my family economically, you know what I mean? I could provide for my family in a way I never could. And I will tell you, to be recognized for a song that I truly believe God wrote, you know, cause I'm like, I feel like a vessel and just, I'm watching it happen. But when someone walks up to you and goes, oh, I wanted to kill myself just a month ago and I was about to, and I listened to Rise Up and I didn't, that's crazy. When someone says this got me through cancer or my losing a family member or depression or mental illness, it's so, gratitude is all I can say, you know what I mean? Bring it to its feet, move mountains, and we'll rise.
Do it a thousand times again. You
It's an amazing, amazing anthem. And I guess I just wonder if you remember, since it wasn't like top of mind when you're putting your own debut album together, do you remember what was in your mind when you wrote it?
That I didn't want to be here and didn't want to write it. You know, it's very funny. Maybe I should just not want to do shit. Because much like this movie, yeah, really it's like, no. It's like anything I'm pursuing is like, anything. Yeah. I'm like, oh, hell no. That's everything. Like, people love it. Right. It was just like this movie. I did not want to do this movie. I did not want to write this song. Because I was just tired. I was like, it was the first time that, you know, and I'm a believer, not just a believer in God, but I'm really, and in the Holy Spirit in Christ, I'm a believer in like, in just your opportunities, and you got to really. So this was the first time in my life, out of all the no's, out of all the bad situations, out of all that, I was starting to feel like, damn, maybe this is not going to happen, you know? And like, how do I reconcile that? How do I have peace with spending all these years pursuing this, not knowing anything else? You know what I mean? And like, so, and then a friend had just been diagnosed with cancer. I didn't want to be there. I was tired. I was over. And so I literally sat in my car before walking into the wonderful Jen Del Silvio's house, who did the music and helped me craft out everything for the song. And I just prayed. I said, God, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. But if you got something you want to say, just let it be all your words. I don't even want to be present. Just you do you. And so she played. And I actually freestyled most of the song out in the first take. Yeah, that's how I was like, oh, maybe we're supposed to. So we etched out the rest of the lyrics and finished it. And the rest was history, definitely.
That's incredible. And obviously, aside from the stuff that you mentioned about, you know, it was played at the Democratic National Convention where it preceded the mothers of Trayvon Martin and Sandra Bland. Yes. And that was, I think, the beginning of the association with Black Lives Matter. And mm-hmm. I think you even... Was that what you also just performed at the Biden inauguration?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, it's like, this is going to be with you forever, but...
I got to tell you, Scott,
please,
the funniest
sure.
part of this song, first of all, like I said, me and her are not the same. She does her thing, I do mine, I'm like, okay. But this song, after, it's been number one on like the R&B charts on iTunes and all that stuff, yeah. You know, whatever, but never on the worldwide chart, you know what I mean? That was like something totally different. After 5.5 years, just a couple weeks ago, the song was number one in the worldwide iTunes chart for a couple weeks. I was like,
oh my God. What do you think caused that? Was it the inauguration or what was?
Well, it was way after the inauguration because we did it, you know, in January, right? You know what I mean? And so that was just maybe like 3 weeks ago.
Maybe it's Billie Holiday.
Be Billie Holiday. It could be maybe it's still the inauguration. I know somebody sang it. Joss Stone actually sang it on the show. She was on a singing show in mm-hmm. the UK.
Well, the first time though that it really popped was not. I mean, it obviously popped with the Beats commercial, but then with the Grammys. So we got to say you get nominated for your debut album. You get nominated for best R&B album, and then for Rise Up for best R&B performance, and your performance on there, I think, was with Ellie Goulding, but interest in you exploded. I read 429% increase in album sales and 82% increase in streams overnight from that performance. So
yeah it takes 13 years to be an overnight success.
Yeah, it's crazy. But so that's that song. And then another time, I won't say that I was super familiar with the rest of your music at that point, aside from Rise Up. But then I think the next time I really heard about something that and loved something that you were doing was Stand Up For Something, which is a song that you and Common did for Marshall, which was a movie that came out in 2017. I think the song was written by Common and Diane Warren, who's a character mm-hmm. who we've had both of them on this podcast. Yeah. and, you know, Diane, I'm surprised she even like bothers to wake up on Oscar nomination morning every time she's nominated every year. It's incredible.
But
anyway, that song gets nominated.
Stand up for yourself.
That one got both the Grammy nom and the Oscar nom. And now you're performing it with Common on the Oscars. I was there that night. I was like, this is the next big, this is the next big pop for you, right?
Yeah, well, that performance actually is what ended up landing me the Billie Holiday job. I had been auditioning at the end of 2017. And at literally the night after the Oscars, I get a call from Lee because he had been, I guess, talking to the producers about it. And I guess they saw that performance and they were like, hire her. And so he called me and said, you got the job. And I was like, whoa. I was with my mom and my day to day in my living room. We were like, whoa. But I still was like, you sure you don't want to use somebody else?
Well, that is crazy that you were hesitant and that he even needed to see that to hire you. And we'll talk about why that was in a moment. But let's. This, I think, is crazy background that I want to give our listeners, that long before the United States versus Billie Holiday movie or your association with it, here's some weird connections. In 2015, Gail Mitchell, who used to work across the hall from us because Billboard and Hollywood Reporter are same parent company, she wrote a profile of you, 2015, describing your voice as, quote, a distinctive amalgamation of Billie Holiday, Dinah Washington, Nina Simone, Aretha Franklin, and Motown. That same year, Katie Presley at NPR says that your voice exhibits, quote, Eartha Kitt's unflappable confidence, Amy Winehouse's effortless grasp of classic jazz, Billie Holiday's access to raw emotion, and Adele's range and pop sensibility. Additionally, correct me if I'm wrong, you were already sometimes wearing a gardenia on stage in homage to Billie. Yeah. And you apparently in 2017, I saw, sang Strange Fruit for the Equal Justice Initiative. Yes. So it's like that on top of your last name being Day. Yeah. It's like this was meant to be.
I'm starting to think maybe it was. Even though because I'm a fan of hers, I would have never agreed to do this. You know what I mean? I think being such a big Billie Holiday fan was what made me go, nah, I don't want to know. Like, I'm too big of a fan. I do not want to be a stain on this woman's legacy. I don't want to botch this project. Like, I was like, no, it's not happening. But, you know, it's funny when you say that too, because... I guess it all sort of kind of flowed together, you know? I don't know.
Well, and so, you know, you mentioned that by the time you were on the Oscars, that was in early 2018, you'd already been in talks with Lee about possibly being involved. How did you first catch wind of the fact that there was even going to be such a project? And because I should just note, if our listeners haven't put it together yet, it's not like you were doing a ton of acting before this. No, I mean, you probably have to go back to Once on This Island.
Yeah. The last acting gig I had was when I was 16 years old. Yeah. So, yeah, knocked it out of the park, by the way, y'all.
It just took a while for the tape to get around.
I had never acted on screen before, which I think is what made me so scared, you know. And so I really, really what just, and you're asking just kind of like what got me into it. Like,
well, just even how did you find out there was such a thing happening?
It was from my manager, actually. You know, they reached out to, it's so interesting. I don't even know why Lee had all these people in his life lobbying for me to do this. You know, that's the crazy part. Lee didn't want to work with me. I didn't want to do the movie. You know, sort of like, you know, so all the chips were aligned for us to be like, great, let's move on and make it great.
Yeah, right.
You'll have someone else starring and I'll enjoy when it comes out in theaters, right? Yes. You know? And then COVID was like, no, it won't be in a theater. And our managers were like, you will meet each other.
Yeah.
So it was through our managers and we had an initial meeting and I just was so scared. I was like, okay, you know. And then he would ask me questions too, just about the movie, what I knew about her, why I loved her and all this stuff. And I would ask him about the script. And so it was really finding out from him that, A, we weren't remaking Lady Sings the Blues because I knew I did not want to do that. Like, Diana killed it. Why would I try to follow? Really? Come on. You know what I mean? It's like trying to like sing I Will Always Love You. Just let it go. So I was like, I don't want to do that. You know, and but then he told me the story of that it would be actually highlighting the first war on drugs and how they went after Billie. And as a fan, I knew that story already. So that was intriguing. That's what made me do the audition. That's what made me say, okay, I will go and I'll audition for it. but I'm going to be bad, you know, like, and I used to tell him all the time, I said, if I suck, you have to tell me right away. Don't try to save my feelings, please. Don't try to help me. Just, so he connected me with Tasha Smith, who started preparing me for the audition. And then she sent him a clip of me, not even rehearsing, I guess, just dropping into Billy or trying to get into character. And he said he saw God in it, you know what I mean? And he saw, and he was like, I knew I had to hire you. And I was like, wow, it's just, So, it was just a crazy, we just had to trust each other, you know?
Well, I want to read for listeners, this is something that Lee had said, you know, his version of how you guys first, yeah. You know, how he came around on you. Quote, my managers, people who work with me, they were like, Andrew is who you have to hire. And I was like, fuck y'all. I was like, poor girl. I was like, poor girl, she doesn't stand a chance. But then we met, and I believe this was at Soho House. And when I first looked at her, I saw her spirit. I got chills. She wasn't a desperate actress that just wanted to do it. I could tell she was questioning whether she was good enough. To me, that is when you know that you are really dealing with a perfectionist. She wanted to do the role justice. That's all you're looking for as a director, close quote. So can you take me through, what was the audition process? Were there specific scenes that you remember doing?
Yeah, it was three scenes in particular that we were going to do. And I think he does say that he was intrigued that I was like, it's like, not that I didn't like that. I was not trying to get it, that I was running from it. I was like, you know, I don't know. I love her too much to see it not, especially knowing her truth and what she fought, to see it not come to fruition would have killed me. Actually really would have killed me. So the audition process, I mean, to me, I don't know. I don't have experience doing it another way or in the business, you know? So to me, it was definitely rigorous. It was multiple auditions we went through. We put it on tape, you know, so he could see. And then he brought me in to do a reading, you know? And then we did a couple readings, and she would train me. So it was tape and it was readings. And we had three scenes that we had to do. And oh my God, I have to just don't even like share this, because there's stuff that I engaged in and I did for this role because I prayed heavily about it and I had peace about it. I just don't want like another actress that's maybe never done anything or an actor that's coming up to be like, I got a smoke cigarette. You don't, you know what I mean? And so, you really don't. This is what I did to prepare for this role and what got me into it and all this. So we're doing this one scene. Oh my gosh, it was so crazy. There's a scene where she gets arrested and she just takes her clothes off and she's da da da. You know, I never told this before, but the movie's out now. So.
Yeah.
and so I'm preparing for the audition. I think it shook Lee too, because Lee's like, whoa, we don't want to get in trouble. We don't, you know, like. But I had prepared this one scene that there was one scene we were going to do first, and then it was that scene. And so I had prepared the different outfits for it, and my team and my hair person Natasha, they had got me ready for those things. And so I was dropping in and getting ready for that. And I had planned on the second scene when we did it, I had like this bra on. So I was going to take it all off and throw, but keep that on. So I would still be, you know, covered. Cause I just, to me, it's like, my dad's always said, you're either in or you're out. You know what I mean?
So
they switched it at the last minute. So the first scene was the scene where she's like taking her clothes off and going crazy. And I was not required to do that, but I won't believe it if I don't.
Yeah.
But for that, the scene I had planned, I didn't have a bottle.
Surprise, Lee.
So I'm going through and I'm doing it. And by the time it comes to that, I was like, here, just take this. And I throw it at the camera and everyone's standing there like, and then you're scrambling, get her a blanket, get her a blanket. And because I just, in my mind, I was like, all right, well, here it goes.
They're leave it all on the table, right?
They're not that impressive anyway, so it's like not.
hey, you know, don't knock them, don't knock them.
It was just crazy. And then we had to do like, when Lakeith was still cast, we did like a chemistry read with him and like a test shoot thingy with him as well too. So it was a lot of steps in the whole process, you know what I mean? And on top of the work, just preparing for her. But it was a great lesson, you know?
Well, people, as you say, this is not necessarily to be copied by others, but let's just talk about step-by-step.
Honey, don't do it.
Right. So you mentioned Tasha Smith. I think that's somebody who had worked with Lee with Empire and just made, you know, he recommends you spend some time with her doing what?
Well, I had to learn how to act. So she's my acting coach. He introduced me to Tasha Smith, who was my great acting coach, Tom Jones, who was my wonderful dialect coach. And so, you know, I mean, it was everything all sort of truncated in as much as we could get. So I just realized as I'm going through the audition process with her that I'm like, I have to lose myself in this if I'm going to be able to do this, you know? And so, and you know, I'm a researcher, you know, as I said, we're both, mm-hmm. you know, born similar time, you know, you need all the information. I want every detail I want, you know, and they were great because they were like, wonderful that you have all of this research and that you have all this stuff in this well of knowledge about period, about Billy, about the FBI, about, you know, all these characters and the war on drugs and jazz and, you know, but you need to fill all that with a human being now, you know? And so she had to really teach me how to access my emotions, how to live and stew in them, how to bring them out. I mean, she taught me just the feeling of, you know, really there's like exercises that can sort of emulate nodding, right? For heroin addicts or when you're drunk or, you know, you're doing cocaine or you're doing, you know, and so, and just really taught me how to be present, how to, you know, replace things, how to be present in the scene. But the thing she gave me that was the best was to be fluid. You know what I mean? She said, you can prepare everything all day long, but until you have to get on that set. And if Lee says, I don't want any of it, give me something different. You got to, on the drop of a dime, change, you know? And it worked because in the audition, he said, there was one scene I was doing and he was like, I want you to do it drunker. And he's like, and you just drop right in and we're kind of okay everywhere. And he was like, right. So it worked because he saw what she had sort of prepared in me in that moment. So,
and then
Tom Jones, my dialect coach, just, how does she breathe? You know what I mean? How does she laugh? It comes not just her tone and how to break up, create all that gravel in there, but also her accent, right? She's from Baltimore by way of Philly. She lives in Harlem. You know what I mean? There's nephew, like Baltimore, people from Baltimore speak differently with their use and just different things. So it was just every detail of the voice. That's why I started smoking the cigarettes, drinking the alcohol, stopped taking care of my voice. Just, I had to earn in a very short period of time what she earned in 44 years, you know, 44 short years. But
well, I want to pause for a second and go back to something you said earlier, which was you talked about there was sort of like a spiritual turning point in your life. Mm-hmm. Is that something, if it's not something you're comfortable talking about, we'll move on. But I just wonder, do you remember what caused that? Because it's going to lead into the next thing I want to ask you about with regard to Billy. But is that something you could talk about?
You mean a spiritual turning point, like with regard to the movie or just in
no, even before you were saying like there was a moment and I think it was around the time of maybe Steve. It would. Yeah. What like yeah. what where you I think is where you started to be much more devout, if that's the right word.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. More focused.
Yeah.
No, I'm totally comfortable talking about it. My whole first album is actually about it, honestly. So it was really, there was just a time in my life, like I said, I was just living, you know, it's funny because you hear people go self-care and living for yourself, you know what I mean? And which I think is great, but there has to be a degree of accountability, you know what I mean? Otherwise, oftentimes our desires don't really line up necessarily with what's good for us. You know what I mean? And so, because there's a lot of things I want to do, but that I don't engage in because I'd be fucking myself over and someone else in my life.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And that was really the case. You know, I had been seeing someone for a long time. I was in a relationship for like 8 years, you know, and I was not faithful to him. I was not a good girlfriend. I was not, and beyond a good girlfriend, I just wasn't a good person. You know what I mean? I was lying all the time, you know, and then a part of that also too was just the, I was like smoking weed all the time, even though, again, like some people can do it and be fine drinking, you know, I wasn't like an alcoholic, but I just was sort of to feel less guilty about all of the shit that I was engaging in, really just betraying people and betraying my family, this person. And it's just those moments when you got to turn and people will be like, that's not a big deal, but it is a big deal. You know, I had developed an addiction to like pornography even, you know what I mean? And like, and even with sex, like that's why I gave it up. Cause I was like, this is ruling my life in a way that I can't be productive. I'm treating people like shit, you know? So anyway, I had to really get to a point. It's really one of the hardest things to do, to look at yourself in the mirror and say the words cold to yourself. You are not a good person. You know what I mean? Like you can be, and you are really originally that way, but the choices you're making are extremely selfish and they're hurting people and they're, you know, and so, that was really the moment that I was like, and that was really when God got a hold of me and just I had experienced so much grace and love. You know what I mean? It wasn't guilt and shame, which I should have totally felt, you know? I felt conviction, and I went back and told the truth to my ex, to my family, to reconcile and to serve and to, but there wasn't, I had, there was so much grace and so much love of like, you're a human, you know what I mean? So let's just
and
trust
so that's
me.
What led into the debut yeah. album. And I think
yes,
Gold was particularly one of the
yeah, absolutely.
Songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So the reason I bring that moment up in the context of Billy is that now as a character, you got to go back in the
yes.
sewer
oh,
with all this,
love you
right?
To say that.
I mean, was that emotionally jolting or whatever to now have to not only be doing the things that you had been doing at a darker time in your life, but mm-hmm. on top of that, I mean, as far as I know, you weren't doing heroin and
no,
stuff
no.
of that magnitude. So now it was going to get like, this is a pretty dark headspace. And as Andra playing Billy, you've got to now do things that Andra no longer does. And
yeah.
whether it's the swearing or drinking or on camera having to be nude and have sex and all this stuff that you've talked about, I guess I just wonder, how did you reconcile those things?
That's such a great question. And I'm so glad you asked it too, because I think even people, right, who are like, you know, believers or say that to them. So we're like, well, how can you do this? And how can you, you know, all this stuff as well. And honestly, my response was like, listen, I prayed heavily about this and got sheer peace about this because I don't want to do it. You know what I mean? Like, so, but, so I was kind of be like, take it up with him. You know what I mean? I'd be like, ask, you know what I mean? Ask the spirit about it, you know, like, if you feel a type of way about it. But no, the way I did was that I truly, truly, it wasn't even that I had to reconcile it. And that sounds really weird, but I'm telling you, when I had the green light to do this and to have peace, it was actually a friend of mine was concerned. It was like, go into prayer about it. And I was like, yeah, definitely. I was like, to pray it away, right? And that's what we were trying to do. And in the moment, it was the scripture about Peter asking Christ to cause him to get out of the boat and to walk on water. And it was like so clear in that moment that it was like, I'm going to cause you to do an act of great faith. And I was like, shit.
Well, and I want to be clear that I wasn't saying it in a judgmental way at all, because I think that it, I think it's, you know, it's the greatest thing somebody can be to me is empathetic.
Yes.
And that's what this role demanded more than anything, I would guess. Right.
Thank you. No. And that's really what it was. And I appreciate that. And I was not saying you were judging, but some people were sort of, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
like not,
yeah.
or not understanding. I should give them more credit than that. They just weren't understanding. And I didn't know fully either. You know what I mean? And so I feel like, and now I look back and I'm like, oh my God, like I feel like God used this movie to really usher me into a deeper space of revelation and understanding, you know, in my faith and just how to love people. And like, you know, because I really feel like God wanted her story told. You know, it made me, the scripture I kept having in mind, what is done in darkness will be brought out to light. And I think that's beautiful. You know what I mean? Because it's a space of clarity and of freedom. And her fight deserved to have this look, you know. And I always tell people, I said, when I was on set, I could feel that God loved me and everyone on set and loved her. You know what I mean? It was like, this has to be, what she gave up is huge. You know what I mean? And the other part is, I think it's very funny, right? I'll get into that. I'll tell you, you know. I think it's very funny when people go, well, this is so crazy and blah, blah, blah. Because I go like, yo, you read the Bible? That shit is trill as hell. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it is not sugarcoated.
Not
like,
at all.
You know, so, but I realize a lot of people read it through the lens in America often of with an agenda, right? An agenda sort of to control, an agenda to just have things the way that they're comfortable with or that they like or things that, you know. And I think I'd like to definitely see that sort of uncovered as well, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, so then there's the physical aspect of all of this, which I thought, you know, like seems like everybody else that you look great before this. You now lost 39 pounds.
Yeah.
I wish I knew how to do that. What was your secret?
You can do it. Just be hungry and miserable.
Yeah. I don't know anymore. That sounds a little.
It's so funny. Everybody wants to be like, there was this great diet secret I had. I was hungry as shit. I was angry as shit.
Yeah.
My my poor family when I'm just like in hunger, anger mode or whatever. But, you know, so no, I mean, I tried to, because we had a good portion of time before we started filming, because it was so difficult for me to get the funding for this film. I had a good bit of time, so I wanted to lose it healthily at first, you know. But once we got in, you know, into 2019 and closer to filming, you know, I was very clear. I did want to starve myself. So we did bring my calories down to like 600, you know what I mean, a day. And then even lower, there were moments that I would go like 2 days without eating or, you know what I mean? And so just drinking some water, not too much, because there was a little bit. And I'll tell you why, again, as the muscle grows, hopefully it won't be like stupid. It did something to my body. Obviously, it does something to your body. When you are starving, when you're hungry, everything is in preservation mode, reserve. So you're slower, you know what I mean? You're gaunt, you know what I mean? And I didn't want... The worst vision I had was me walking into the sex scene with like an 8-pack. I was like, that's not you. Like, come on, you guys. Like, we're not, we can't walk into set. I was so clear with my trainers, with the food people. I was like, there cannot be a hard body Billy on set. So, and so I was like, there's got to be loose skin. I mean, RIP to this top half, because she's gone after Billy. So it was like, these need to kind of sag and things need to be, you know, if it's going to really be believable for people, you know. And then it slowed me down. Billy, I'm fast, and Billie Holiday is molasses slow. So when you're smoking cigarettes and you're drinking and you're not sleeping for days and you haven't eaten in 2 days, you know, and then I would kind of like binge on like eggs, something or whatever the next day. But it slowed me down in a way that honestly, I'm not mad at. It was very helpful in certain scenes to not have to think about being slow and to just think about the emotion of it, you know?
Well, and in fact, also, I think, like, I'm thinking about the performance of Strange Fruit just as one example, where she's not like up there dancing. She is a pretty still performer, and it's all in the eyes, and it just 100%. Seemed right.
Right. This isn't a Josephine Baker.
No.
Billy's gonna give you this.
Yeah. No. Yes.
I'll give you a little twist. But this is where we are. You know what I mean?
But that was, I mean, that was great, because we really like it. We focus in on your face, your eyes. I get what you mean. How that could be intimidating as a first time actress to have the close up like that. But you had the brown contact lenses. Mm-hmm. You did something. Why did they cut off all your hair?
Because she had short hair, you know what I mean? And so, and Lee is very, he's really, really brilliant in this way, honestly. We had wigs, we had great wig techs, God rest Charles Gregory, and Stacey Merriman on set, who did my hair as well, too. But he's a person who's, I hate makeup. I hate makeup, I don't like makeup. And he wants the hair to look as natural as possible, that, you know, all this stuff as well. So that it could really feel like her and be like her, you know, and because she did have short hair, you know, and so we used wigs, but we also used my natural hair. And in the scene where, you know, Billy meets Jimmy for the first time in the dressing room, that's my natural hair, you know. So it was just what was going to be real, you know what I mean? I think what he liked most also about one of my auditions was like I had just come from like a show. So like I had like bitten all my nails off and I just had one long gross nail still hanging on. And he loved that shit, you know, like that's his vision. That's his eye. He loves that nuance, you know? So it was really his genius that really, that captured that, you know?
So this was a long process. I think you were, you're saying that you got the role after the Oscars in early 2018. You guys don't start filming till fall of 2019. It, I guess there are a few reshoots and things going all the way into 2020, right?
Yeah,
and end of 2020. Now, finally, early 2021, people start to see this. You get the reaction to that. Then comes this moment with the Golden Globe nomination and then the show. I know that it's probably the same with music. It's not the most healthy thing to put your self-worth in anyone else's hands, whether it's a critic or awards or whatever. But that being said, it's got to have been pretty nice to go into, to have this reaction and both from public critics. And then this moment, what is it, 2 Sundays ago?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yes. Yes. Was 2 Sundays ago already? Oh my gosh. No. And you're right. 100%. It's not why I did it. I mean, to be honest with you, most of the time I was just like, I want to get off this set. I'm terrified. But then it transitioned to me being like, I never want to leave this set. It's my favorite place. This is my new life. I am Billie Holiday. You know what I mean? So I don't know who I am. I only want to be her. So, but it's not. I mean, I wasn't even, to be honest with you, I was not. I'm being 100% honest. because this is not typically my world, you know, so I wasn't thinking about the other side of things. You know, I forget that to me, when I was pressing promo, I was like, yes, it's another excuse to see Lee in my cast. You know, I'm thinking it's so tough. And then COVID was a hater and was like, nah. But but I will say I did not do it for that reason. And I'm not just saying this to be like, oh, humble. I was terrified. But, you know, but yes, of course, it's a blessing also because it's like, you know, it just reminds me too, you know, I think about everything ties back to that spiritual relationship with me. Faith and works together, right? It's so beautiful. It's not really about earning it, but it is still working hard. You know what I'm saying? And like trusting enough to put in the work and to believe. And I just, I don't know. It reminds me also too. I always tell people, I'm like, you don't really have to like this idea of like, I'm competing. I'm like, no, what's for you is for you. And it's the greatest. And mm-hmm. you don't have to pine for that. Work hard. And that's a higher standard of work, you know, but it reminds me that like, you know, yeah, it just like, yeah, that it's that what is for you is for you. You know what I mean? You can't, like, you won't even be able to self-sabotage your way out of it.
Well, and I mean, I was watching like everybody else that Globes night, and I wondered, I mean, you looked as surprised as anyone. Did you, yeah, were you?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I was fully shocked, bro. I'm not gonna lie. Listen, there was someone in my mind who I was certain they were gonna give it to, so I'm not gonna say, you know what I mean? But I was like, there's no fucking way I'm gonna get this award, bro. Like, I was shocked if that person, I would have been shocked if that person didn't win the award. Forget myself. Like, I was just expecting, I was like, if that person doesn't win, I'll be shocked that they called some other name.
Right.
But I was just there for, like, you know what I mean? The cake and the cupcakes and shit. Like, you know, we had worked hard, and I guess my team was like, totally, this is definitely, I was like, whatever, bro, like, cool, gotta enjoy this, but, so, to me, it was, I was like, I'm nominated, you know, this is so, I still was trying to wrap my head around that, and, but receiving it, too, God's great, you know what I mean, I trust in that, but, yeah, I was definitely shook when I just remember, Scott, I'm telling you, for real, everything slowed down in the room. And all I heard was, and I was like, I don't think I had enough time in that slowed down moment to think, I don't think anybody else in this category has a hard A in this like that. I was like, then everything just erupted and we.
Well, that was your parents, right, with you and everybody. That was great. Everybody. Really
my
nice.
Families, family members.
Well, and know. I mean, I guess people shouldn't have been super surprised because we know that they, like the Critics' Choice Association, which I'm part of there, you were nominated not only for the acting, but also for Tigress and Tweed, which is people song. Think this, you know, these are all, it is mostly Billy songs, but that's an original.
An original. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's actually one of the things I've written. It is probably my favorite thing I've ever written in my life.
Wow.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, I tapped Rafael Sadiq to do the music for it. And I reached out to him. He saw the movie. He loved it. And I was just talking to him about just kind of bringing her into now and how we kind of, what my vision is for that. You know, he sent over this beautiful track and he says it has a wrong piano chord in it, but it's beautiful. And I love that because, you know, Billy, wrong piano chord, but beautiful, right?
Yeah.
But when I tell you, it took me like a month, a little over a month to write these lyrics. I was so, and they're hitting me too. Andrew was going, all the lyrics, come on, we need the. But it came the way Rise Up came. Right after I prayed about it, it all came pouring out. And I just had a need. It was Flip Strange Fruit. If Billie Holiday were alive today, how would she want to see, Strange Fruit evolved, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the first things that I had a need to do was to take the strange fruit off of the tree. I don't want them sat on the tree. I don't want them hanging on the tree because that's a comfortable song for other people to listen to. It's a comfortable story for them to say, it's so sad they're on the tree. We feel bad. Savior. You know what I'm saying? Like, as opposed to strange fruit is they own the tree. They cut the tree down. They're healthy. They're fertilized. They're brolic. They're armed. They're unified. They're educated. They're, you know, I wanted to see that strength, that fight, you know what I mean? A mobilized, unified front line. And so I wanted to evolve the idea of what strange fruit is, you know, and that was, so I really am really grateful.
but I've been rallying the troops. Chariots are flame alarm behind my Mozzie coupe. Dumb move at these roots. They stick to me. Big fruit, big vibe. Always pressing that line. So full of love and light. The truth is black and white. Say a prayer for me. Cause I don't get no sleep. Say a prayer for me.
All right, so we have 1 minute left, and I want to just do what we call, if it's okay, rapid fire, just kind of the first thing.
I was so mad at this. Somebody rapid fired me the other day. They're like, favorite romantic comedies. I'm like, Lady Sings the Blues. None of those are funny. I was like, oh, shit.
You can even not make it rapid if you want, because some of these might. Yeah, I mean.
I'm ready.
What do you think Billy would have made of this current moment in America?
Oh, is this a part of the rapid fire?
We're going to get rid of the rapid part. This is just.
I realize
that's something that probably, you know, I don't want to trivialize like that. Like you've said, and other people say, you know, in a way, the mother of the civil rights movement.
Yes, truly.
Here we are at another key turning point. Hopefully, yeah. I guess it's had to go through a lot to get to this moment. And mm-hmm. it's not been a great year or years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But just if she could be here, what would she have to say about it?
I think what she would say about the time is she would be like, I think she'd say, wow, you know what I'm saying? Wow, you know what I mean? Like, we have definitely made some strides. I think there's another part of her that would go, son of a bitch, what they planned worked. You know what I mean? There is a part, I think that a huge part that she would say, wow, this was their plan the entire time, was to diminish the scope of Black people, of people of color, and marginalized people's struggle. And diminish the depth and the breadth of their contribution and their triumph. And so I think there's a part of her that would weep a little bit at that it was able to be successful. And I think there's a part of her that would weep at how far we have come, you know what I mean, as a people, how resilient we have been and what we fought through and what we've had to face. I think that what she would tell us is to keep telling the story. Tell more of her story. I think she would say, now go tell Lester's story. You know what I mean? Now go tell Beethoven's story. Now go tell the story of the man, the Black man Carver, right? He was not just the peanut butter man, but he actually saved us from truly being destroyed in an economic depression. Go tell the story of Lafayette. I only remember his last name, Lafayette, the slave that infiltrated the British camp that really netted us our independence, you know what I mean? Go tell these stories. Now go tell this person's story. Now go tell that person's story. Because we will never, ever, ever truly be equal or free if we don't know our real history, you know? And so I think what she would try to do is hijack the narrative, or not really hijack it, take it back.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to tell these stories, you know?
How about in terms of music, which, I mean, aside from the influence that we see in your own work, can you just give us your, like, expert opinion, where do you see her influence in the world of music today? The top?
Oh, everywhere.
Everywhere?
Everywhere. And the funny part is, even in people who don't know that they're influenced by her. Because this sort of free form singing, that phrasing that we're very, very used to on top of not just jazz records, you know, even on top of pop records, right? Because the worlds are all melding together, you know, that mixing of worlds, right? Billie Holiday, she always was like, I'm a blues singer. And everybody be looking at her like, sis, you hit the breaker to you, but you're a jazz singer. So and so that melding of like blues and soul and jazz and gospel and, you know, and that free form singing, we're very familiar with it. That's actually all we all know how to sing. That was not a thing before Billie Holiday. You know what I mean? And so, you know, it was very structured and do whatever. So that free form phrasing and singing that she did, that's her. So, I mean, most singers sing the way they do nowadays without realizing it because of Billie Holiday, you know, that mixing genres has a lot to do with her. And so, and it's because nobody believed in her. They'd give her the shitty songs, they'd give her the shitty music or whatever. So she says, all right, I'm going to sing it the way I sing it. You know what I mean? And I'm going to own it, you know?
And I think, yeah, it's really kind of a flip side. I think roughly the same time, maybe, we see in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, where you see how artists had to deal with bullshit from labels, which I'm sure continues to this
always.
Day.
But, yeah. Always. It was, listen, at that time, yes, it does continue today. You know what I mean? But that then as well, it was just, you know, almost just the musical modern plantation. You know what I mean? And that's what I hope we begin to see is the undoing of not just the criminalization, but the monetization and exploitation of sort of black bodies and culture and these things. Let's just enjoy all of it. You know what I mean? And celebrate the people that it comes from as well too. So yes, you saw that brilliantly done. And, oh my God, Viola Davis, man, I love her so much.
Yeah.
I got flowers from her. So crazy, man.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I love her so much, but yeah, so I think that, you know, we'll begin. I was telling someone the other day, there is no reason why the Oscars this year or why the Oscars next year or why should not be full, this category and others, full of black faces, full of women's faces, full of queer faces, full of a bunch of different walks of life. You know, even when it comes to, like, you know, white men, right? You know what I mean? Like Jewish men, when it comes, you know, I'm like, well, you're still talking about an array of people. You know what I mean? Yeah. One person. One state or from one country is not the same as another. So I think I would love to just see so much more of that represented and celebrated in these spaces. Definitely.
I think, yeah, definitely. And this year it seems like, knock on wood, it's moving in a better direction. But yeah. Last question, looking ahead to the future, what do you hope people take away from all of this renewed attention that's being placed on Billie Holiday and your movie? And then on the flip side, what about your future? Are you going to be kind of a one and done actress, or hopefully are you now on board to keep doing this?
So listen, I thought I was a one and done. I might have told you this before when I was on set. And like I said, Matt, I'm going to tell you something. If Devine was here, if Tyler was here, Trevante, everywhere, they'd be laughing their asses off at me right now because they'd be like, girl, you on set, we thought you were retired. You know what I mean? They'd be like, man, you know, when you do another role, I'd be like, stop it. I'm not doing another role. I'm done. Okay. But it just feels like, you know, she took everything, but she also grew so much in me. So it was hard, this idea of moving on from her, you know, feels like cheating on her almost. But I really, it all ties together, really, right? What I hope people get from this movie is that there are so many more stories that need to be told. So many, you know, and that it's a trap. It should bother. I think even if you're, you know, sort of a part of overarching like white society or whatever, it should bother you that you don't know the true history of your nation, right? You know what I mean? These were lies that were, you know, told to you as well. So I feel like I want more of these stories told. And that goes in line with what I see for the future. You know, I've started developing something actually as well and started researching and just, you know, the holes that we go down in writing and studying. So there's something I want to get behind the camera. I want to start to write and co-produce and co-direct and just sort of working on this idea for this series, because I want a lot of lost history to be told. As far as acting goes, you know, I'll probably do a little bit more. I say that now, but I always joke with my cast, and I joke with Lee. Lee and I talk all the time, and I'm like, Lee, I'll do it again if it's with you. you know, and my cast, I love them so much. But yeah, I probably a little bit more, but I really, really want to get into just developing certain stories that I have a desire to tell, which I can't tell you, but hopefully I'll be able to break it to you.
Come
first.
Back to me. Yeah, no, I mean, I can't thank you enough. It's been so fun getting to... you know, I've loved your voice for a while. Now I loved your performance, and it's been so nice to just discover what a class act you are as a person.
Thank
so thank you.
Likewise.
Really appreciate it.
And great. I got described as classy.
You are that's it. You tell anyone if they have a problem with that, give me a call. Thanks again. I really appreciate
it. Thank you so much, Scott. I'll talk to you
soon.
Take care. Take care. Bye.
Thanks very much for tuning in to Awards Chatter. We really appreciate you taking the time to do that, and would really appreciate you taking a minute more to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or your podcast app, and to leave us a rating as well. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can reach me via Twitter at twitter.com/ScottFeinberg. And you can follow all of my coverage between episodes at thr.com/TheRace. Until next time, thanks for joining us.